This is Focus with Emma Griffiths on ABC Radio Brisbane.
Think of your suburb, the houses, the streets, the parks, where you live, how you get around, where you walk the dog. Without doubt, it's changing. Just the increasing number of people who want to live around here mean change is inevitable. And there are some big changes in the works. There's an upgrade at South Bank, a zip line, and a First Nations walk at Mount Cutha. Developments in Nunda, Mount Gravatt, Yerongpilly, to name a few. Oh, Queen's Wharf. Brisbane's growing. We've got units going up. We've still got houses sprawling out. So what's happening in your neck of the woods? And is your suburb changing the way you want it to? 1300 222 612 is the number to call in to be part of the Focus program today. And you can also text 0467 922 612. Is your suburb changing the way you want it to? Maybe it's becoming more vibrant and alive. And there's a local to go down to on a weekend now. Or maybe it's too busy for you. Maybe there are too many people and you're sick of all the traffic congestion. I don't know. I need to know. Is your suburb changing the way you want it to? If you are out and about, download the ABC Listen app. You can stay listening to us. And you can also download the whole hour of Focus from the ABC Radio Brisbane Focus website a little bit later today.
Emma Griffiths, Focus on ABC Radio Brisbane.
You'll also get updates on the fire situation around Queensland through this Focus Hour, as the fireys are updating us on the situation, and so is the Premier throughout, well, she's speaking in about 25 minutes. But to your suburb and the changes happening in Brisbane, and to discuss this today with you, from the Planning Institute of Australia, Morgan Randall, Laurel Johnson from UQ's School of Earth and Environmental Sciences, and Laurel's also an urban and social planner who manages her own planning consultancy too. Dr. Ellen Charles Edwards is a senior lecturer in human geography, so she knows why we live where we do and then what happens. And Natalie Raymond is a Brisbane resident, a town planner, a member of the Property Council's Committee for Cities, and a self-confessed YIMBY, someone who says yes in my backyard. Natalie, what does it mean to be a YIMBY?
Well, Emma, I say it is. It's a different attitude. It's looking at development or a project in your area and saying we need these projects in Brisbane because we've got a growing population. And so it's saying yes in my backyard to good development outcomes. And I think, you know, that is the conversation that we need to have. Let's not have a conversation to say stop development. Let's say, you know, what's good development and what should we embrace in our suburb?
Now, given your work, you're a town planner, you're on the property council. So is YIMBY, yes in my backyard, I mean, is that just sort of like a PR thing to try and spin development a different way?
For me, absolutely not. I guess for me, I'd say I became a town planner because I'm passionate about how our cities grow and, you know, how our cities will exist for future generations. So for me, it's a passion piece. It's certainly not something I'm being paid to do. It's a group that I've set up separately. It's a not-for-profit organisation set up to, you know, engage in this conversation.
And so what are the positive associations for you around the word development?
Yeah, so for me, that is about welcoming newcomers into our city and making sure that we are providing people with the different choices that they have. I think it's important that we all, you know, realise that we do make different choices. Some people might want to live in a big house on a big block of land, and other people won't want that maintenance. Might
too much to clean.
Close. Yeah, exactly.
Too expensive to air condition.
Yes.
That's not good, is it, though? So the changes that you're talking about, welcoming new people, is that all part of the story of Brisbane's changing population? Ellen Charles Edwards, are we having a population boom at the moment?
We are. We've had pretty rapid growth the past 20 years. It's not as quick as it has been in the past, but yeah, we're growing quickly.
And what are the suburbs that are changing the most?
There's a lot of suburbs on the south side that are becoming much more diverse as we welcome new Australians. Other parts of the city are getting younger and other parts are getting older.
And could you name a few?
Yeah, so Sunnybank, much more diverse, but places like Nunda, Nudgee, we're getting much, much younger. McGregor is 6 years younger now than it was 10 years ago.
What's happening?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think migrants tend to be younger, but also new types of housing attract different types of people. So if you're building lots of apartments, you're getting your young couples moving in, and it's changing the face of the suburbs.
So what's happening in, for instance, Nunda?
Well, there's been a lot of development. Nunda Village has been an amazing success. We're seeing new forms of housing, and it's a really attractive lifestyle for people.
Mm. Interesting you say it's been a tremendous success. I'm sure there are lots of residents there who think that as well. But on the station, of course, we will get the NIMBYs as well as the YIMBYs who say, not in my backyard, and they don't like the way that Nunda has changed. Laurel, at University of Queensland, one of your research interests is around residents' activism, so the residents fighting against development, or for, I imagine. So what is most likely in a development to get people's backs up?
I think there are a few things going on. Just reflecting on Ellen's comment around the pace of change, I think there's a sort of an underlying fear that the neighbourhood has always been the way I like it, the way it's always been, and now there's things are changing, and they're changing rapidly. And I didn't know it was coming, I didn't see it coming, and I don't have a voice to stop it. So I think there's a sense of sort of fear and powerlessness. And then just picking up what Natalie was saying as well, the design. So we have seen some dreadful design in our medium and high density housing in Brisbane in the past. And I think we, you know, sort of programs like YIMBY are probably a good thing to maybe promote some good quality design so we can see a different product, not just at the higher end price points, but just for general people living in our middle and outer suburbs.
How do you get that though?
Well, there's two ways to get it. One is to persuade the development industry of the value of that through guidance and guidelines, and the other is to regulate it through much stronger planning controls and planning guidelines that insist on good design, great quality outcomes for climate adaptation, etc.
Isn't good design just going to cost more though?
Not always. No, not always.
Mm, that gives you some hope, doesn't it? Morgan Randall with the Planning Institute of Australia. How would you rate some of the developments? Well, how would you rate the developments that are going up around Brisbane?
Yeah, so I think we think that density is actually done pretty well within Brisbane. That's because it's growing in places where you would expect it to grow and as planners where we want to see it grow. So, you know, that's along growth nodes, places that are close to services and things that people need. But, you know, I'll echo the other comments. It really comes back to design. So it's one thing to put the density in the right place, but once it gets there, we need to make sure that on a site-by-site basis, it is really designed well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so for instance, it's hot in Brisbane. We know it's a hot place to live and, you know, the estimates are it's going to get hotter. So are we building well for a hot environment?
I think there is a tendency to be a bit lazy with design sometimes, and that is to rely on things like aircon for cooling. And I think we probably could do a bit of a job, you know, that's through, you know, additional landscaping, basic things like cross ventilation and stuff like that through buildings, which we've known for a very long time, but we don't always implement. So I think there is probably some improvements that could be made with design for, you know, our climate.
Mm. And so, Laurel, what's a practical example of that? I mean, if you talk about building for Brisbane's environment, when we built those Queenslanders up on stilts with that cross ventilation and the big open verandas and louvers and all those sorts of things, well, they're great, but they tend to be judged as too expensive, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I mean, what we did when we built those Queenslanders was we took out a lot of street trees. And when I was living in West End, my footpath was bitumen, black bitumen. So that creates a heat island effect. We know that. We know that trees are a really practical solution. And I'm sure all of your listeners would agree that planting trees cools your microenvironment. It cools your local environment. So a great street trees program and planting more trees in our backyards is something we all need to be doing.
Mm. So it's not just about building design then?
Not just
housing.
About building design. It's what's happening on the street where you're walking.
Okay. Brian in Tarragindi's called in. Brian, is your suburb changing the way you'd like it to?
Not at all.
Are you a NIMBY? Not in my backyard, Brian.
No. We have a whole lot of trouble getting out of the suburb. And it could be simply solved. Monash Road is the main artery through the suburb.
Okay. So can you just elaborate on that a little bit for me, Brian? It's a traffic issue. Too much traffic there.
Yeah, especially on Tui Roads at peak hours and through the day. If you want to go north on Tui Road and you come up Monash, you can't get out easily. There's a lot of accidents. It could be simply solved because Monash Road goes down to meet Tui and Marshall Roads. There's a set of traffic lights there, but traffic from the suburb is not allowed to go down to the lights at Monash Road. That's for buses only. It's a two-lane road. Why the council can't change that traffic light system, I don't know.
That must be very frustrating. Ellen Charles Edwards, in terms of looking at population, you said like the south side, a lot's happening there. So that's can you elaborate at all on that in terms of population pressures on transport, on traffic?
Yeah, look, a working transport system is actually critical for a city to grow, and this is something that we need to really have a look at. We've got more people living in more dense, more densely packed into these suburbs, and if we can't have mass transport to get them where they want to be, the city will actually just grind to a halt.
Laurel Johnson, do you see evidence that there is planning happening to make it easier for all these people to live here?
Probably the standout bit of infrastructure would be the busways. So the busways in our Southeast Queensland network have been incredibly successful, but they're just not all around Brisbane. And ironically, there's not a lot of them on the south. So where I live on the southwest, the buses are competing with the traffic on Blunder Road and on Ipswich Road, trying to get people places. And
by Desert Road.
Absolutely. So we've got buses sort of jammed in traffic jams with cars, and that's just not an effective way to move people around. So people will ultimately go resort back to their car.
Mm. And that puts more pressure on it as well. 17 minutes past 10 on ABC Radio Brisbane. And wondering from you today, the changes in your suburb, are they changes that you like? Or are they changes you don't like? It's probably more complex than a NIMBY or a YIMBY situation, of course, not in my backyard, or yes, in my backyard. But what is happening in your suburb, and do you like it? 1300 222 612. If you think of the houses, maybe it's apartments. If you think of the streets and how you get around there, and also where you can relax, are you happy with the number of parks and green space as well? You could also text in 0467 922 612, and to call, it's 1300 222 612. Looking forward to hearing from you. I know that the Lord Mayor Graham Quirk was on a little bit earlier speaking to Rebecca and Craig, and one of the issues that came up, and it has come up quite a bit on the station, is the Mount Cutha zip line development. Focus, we were out there for the full hour a couple of weeks ago. And I'm just wondering, Laurel Johnson, when you look at that as a case study in resident activism, what do you see?
What I see is Mount Cutha is a really sacred spot for all of us in Brisbane, particularly for Indigenous people in Brisbane. Though it has a kind of spiritual pull for all of us, and it's a significant frame for us. So it's a bit of a sacred site, really, for Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people in Brisbane as well. And I guess that has mobilised people to protect it. The zip line itself, if you look at the detail of that proposal, it's not proposing to damage Mount Cutha in any extensive sense, but I think it's just the nature of that site has coalesced interest because, as I say, it's a bit sacred and special to all of us. If you tried to build on Mount Cutha, for example, some high-rise apartments, the community of Brisbane would also come together and mobilise. So it is about the specialness, the sacredness of that space.
What came across as well when we had the discussion a couple of weeks ago was the sense from the opponents of it that this was privatising public space. Is that something that we see more around Brisbane, or am I right in getting that impression, Laurel?
That is a big issue. So we've in the past we've thought of private open space and public open space, and we've had that duality, and there is now some confusion around that. Is this private or is it public? Like, in some senses, does it matter? As long as we can all use that space whenever we want and it's an inclusive space, does it matter what the tenure situation is? So South Bank, for example, has some private open space and it has some public open space, and we all move through it in a fairly kind of fluid way. So I'm not so hooked up on the tenure issues. It's more about how inclusive those spaces are. Some public spaces aren't inclusive for everybody because they don't allow access for all abilities, for example. They're not welcoming of all ages or all ethnicities, for example. So I think it's, for me, it's more about a principle around inclusiveness.
Okay. 20 past 10 on ABC Radio Brisbane. Calls are coming in. The number again, 1300 222 612, is your suburb in southeast Queensland. Is it changing the way you want it to? Now, the way we design our city, it can actually, well, you know, it can have a massive effect on your health and well-being. And the Heart Foundation has actually had a look at this in terms of city designs being good for us. Cherie Hughes is from the Heart Foundation. Cherie, how does Brisbane shape up?
Hi, good morning. Brisbane's population is set to explode a lot in the coming decades. So, you know, we're going from a big country town into potentially quite a bustling city. So we need to be paying more attention to our density at the moment.
Okay, and so when you had a look at this, is Brisbane a place, is it developing in the way that will keep us healthy?
It has the potential to, yes. Like, if we do density well, I think we will be in good stead for the population that we are going to grow into in the coming decades. So if we look at in density in the urban areas, if we're connecting with public transport and pathways, shops and services and other social connections, then these sorts of things will help us to provide a healthier environment for the community.
And are we doing that enough at the moment? I mean, did you come to any conclusions?
I think we could do it better, and particularly we could do it better in the suburbs. So in the suburbs, we don't have a very high density. It's actually quite low when you compare it to other suburbs around the country. And if we have low density, it's really hard to provide that public transport and services so that people are operating in a more compact environment to be able to continue their daily living.
All right, Cherie, thanks very much for that. It's interesting to think about it in those terms as well. Natalie Raymond, with your work with YIMBY, Yes in My Backyard, and as a town planner, how could Brisbane, the design of Brisbane, actually improve our health?
I think that the Heart Foundation are doing a great job in promoting that discussion within the community, and I think the planning industry needs to as well, and the City Council. I think helping people to understand the relationship between increasing the density or increasing the population in suburbs or locations can actually help us to be healthier, because we're actually creating that critical mass to support more public transport or active transport, bringing in money into infrastructure so that we can improve the bikeways or improve waterway corridors through our city, so that, you know, that there is money coming in and people coming in to support the infrastructure that we need to live healthier lifestyles or more active lifestyles.
And Morgan Randall with the Planning Institute, do you see people's health actually being taken into account when new areas are planned? I'm thinking really nice areas to walk around. You know, you're not walking along a big, busy main road with trucks barreling past you and breathing in the smog.
Yeah, I think for the most part, we're getting much better at it. And, you know, to me, creating healthy communities for people is about creating opportunities so they don't just have to hop in their cars to get anywhere they need to go. And that means that when you are...
messaging you. Was that Siri?
That was not Siri. That was something else. Sorry. Sorry about that. I was not expecting that to happen. I'm going to take my watch off.
Technology.
It's a watch. I know.
Man,
it's
when
everywhere.
Is it going to stop?
Follows you everywhere. So, yeah, like I said, so it's more than just building infrastructure, which are roads. It's about building other infrastructure for people around their local area. Things like open space. So, you know, they can walk out of their house and walk along the creeks, or they can walk along a nice bike track to get to the shops and things like that, which are close to them.
Mm-hmm. I'm in the southwest of Brisbane as well, Laurel. There's not a huge amount of that there. There's lots of main roads and suburban streets. And that's it. You can walk around the suburban streets and say good day to your neighbours, but it's not like there's a nice, you know, the upper reaches of the Bulimba Creek are pretty pretty polluted and, you know, rotten. So what do we as residents need to do?
I mean, as residents, we can always be more active, of course. And we know from research that seeing other people active will inspire you to be more active. So being close to open space, like Morgan was saying, is a great thing. Where you see people being active, you're more inspired to be active yourself. But just back to Morgan's point about other infrastructures in the suburbs, what a really simple issue is that suburbs have only houses generally. So walkability is fine, but you want somewhere nice to walk to grab a coffee or to go to a local restaurant or to even go to work. So the idea of productive spaces in our suburbs, spaces for production rather than just consumption, is also something that planning needs to look at. So not just the density, but the mix of uses within suburbs is important.
And are there places in Brisbane where that's happening?
Well, we have been taking a lens to Salisbury and looking at some of the activity that's been enabled by that particular suburb having a light industrial area, which has enabled all kinds of productive activity, including dance studios and cafes and food production in ways that are surprising. Little microbreweries gone in there, for example, to create kind of a great place. And that's enabled by having a light industry area within and amongst the houses and the green spaces. So mixing uses seems to work for Brisbane, for Brisbaneites.
Because we're so sprawled. If you just want to go into the CBD to, I don't know, grab something nice to eat and have a beer, it can be a schlep in, can't it? It's like 40 minutes on the bus into the city and then, you know, you've got to get to the last bus home. That's in my younger days anyway. Daryl from Rocklea. Daryl, what do you think? Is Rocklea changing the way you want it to?
Oh, most definitely. I'm very disturbed about the concept of what everybody perceives as progress when really, ultimately, it's regress. There's no all these people you've just had on, including the Lord Mayor, just justifying their existence. You know, I've had a dog park put in the end of my street, dead end that it is. $86,000, three or four people a week use this place. A new footpath that we had a beautifully grassed street on the footpath, we've now got this huge monstrosity going down where it's now a concrete jungle. I've got 15 or 20 actually units right opposite me that the whole front path of the front yard of these premises is now a concrete slab.
Is this Rocklea?
I beg your pardon?
And that's all in Rocklea?
It's everywhere. I mean, we've got another 84 units, excuse me, in my street alone, and not as if they try and do anything architecturally pleasing, they just about pleasing the developers, because there's some kind of add-on attachment to what it is to make money for the council or the developers, and the two work hand in hand. We get no say in anything. And look at the poor people from what's happened in the shopping centre at Indooroopilly. That exemplifies exactly what I'm talking about. Why shouldn't they be able to say we don't want poker machines, for instance? I mean, there's no word that I've been trying to say, if we're going to increase this population as we are, let's go with monorails down the centre of the freeways and keep cars off the road. It would save reclamation of land. It would save a whole heap of things, including petroleum.
And Daryl, have you got a glass of water there? Just want to make sure you're okay. But have you complained to the council? Have you taken this to your political leaders?
Of course I have. This is what I'm saying. I think if you find anything to do with anyone, you follow the money trail. And that's how it is with the poker machine thing.
Another conversation, Daryl.
Yes, but I'm talking about even the infrastructure of what we have. In these developments, there are three or four beautiful homes opposite me that have now been demolished, and there's 20 single-bedroom units there with 20 single cars with a concrete slab out the front. Why?
It doesn't sound terrific, does it?
I beg your pardon?
It doesn't sound terrific, Daryl. Laurel, does this go to what you were saying, that people are most likely to get really upset when they feel like their voice is not being heard?
Yeah, absolutely. And Daryl, your frustrations sort of exemplify that, well, for me anyway, that, you know, we have a fantastic big city council area, which is terrific for a whole range of reasons, but it also means that some local areas feel like they don't have a voice in the management of the city. And that's a lot of pressure on the councillors through the ward structure to ensure that there is a voice, that our democracy is really played out in the streets and neighbourhoods in the city. And so we have this tension between an advantage of having a great big council and then people perhaps feeling locally disenfranchised within that model.
Daryl, thank you so much. I want to put your point as well to Natalie and Morgan around the design that he's describing there. But Shelley Lloyd is here with a news update for us at 10:30. Shelley, what's happening?
G'day, Em. Lot is happening. The State Disaster Coordinator, Bob G, says that residents who are refusing to leave bushfire-affected areas are putting their lives at risk. A warning has been issued for residents at Rules Beach on the central Queensland coast, facing an unprecedented bushfire threat to leave their homes immediately. Only Flat Rock Road is now open. Residents are being told to follow that to the creek. They can be ferried across in a boat, and that is their last option to leave that area. The situation there is getting quite dire. Bob G says these conditions are not normal for Queensland. He says that people will burn to death. He says that this is no different from a Category 5 cyclone coming straight through your door. Meanwhile, a dust storm is moving across Western Queensland towards the coast. Michael Welsh from the Rural Fire Service is telling us that this is going to make the job of firefighters that much harder this afternoon when that dust storm starts to impact the coast, because it's going to be bringing not only dust but dry thunderstorms as well, which will affect the bushfire areas.
So you get a bit of lightning as well there.
Indeed, and lightning's the last thing they need with this. Low humidity, high temperatures, big winds. It's a cocktail for disaster. So we have a developing situation there through the central Queensland coast. That Rural Beach area is the part that they're desperately worried about at the moment. People who are refusing to leave the area, they've got about half an hour to get out now.
Okay, thank you, Shelley. And the Premier's still due to speak shortly as well.
Indeed,
from up at Agnes Water.
They're getting up regularly at the EMQ headquarters.
Yep. Okay, great. Thank you very much. Shelley Lloyd there.
Focus with Emma Griffiths on ABC Radio Brisbane.
And to your suburb, is it changing the way you want it to? Daryl from Rocklea was saying there that the development going up across the road from him is, you know, single bedrooms, there's a car space, there's no green space around it. It's meant three houses he thought were lovely were knocked down. Natalie Raymond, is that the sort of development where we just have to suck it up a bit and say, yes, in my backyard, okay, we need to have it somewhere?
Well, I think there's two issues there. One is, you know, is it the right development for the location, and is it better than having three houses if it is close to a railway station or close to a university where we do want to get some, you know, single bedroom to fit a demographic if there's a demand for it, then
I guess Rocklea could be students heading out to Griffith, or it could be students heading into the city.
Yes, and there's a train station there. So if it's very close to the station, so this is going to encourage walkable neighbourhoods, then, you know, my question would be, why are there so many cars? Let's get those people on the trains. But the second point, and it's really disappointing to hear, if there is concerns about the design, because, you know, there is already a lot of regulation around these sorts of developments in Brisbane. And while you know, there might be examples, and I'd be really interested to go and have a look at it. I think, you know, there's very strict provisions in the Brisbane City Plan about providing green space. You know, every multiple dwelling, which is, you know, what that would be, would need to have a certain amount of deep planting space, outdoor living space, private, you know, courtyards or private open space for those dwellings, landscaping along the front.
And Morgan, are those regulations always abided by?
Look, sometimes they're not, but I mean, that's just, I suppose, the planning process. You can have the best intentions sometimes and they're not always delivered.
Or you can have not the best intentions and get away with stuff.
That's true, but I think the intentions are pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm more cynical. Just call me cynical. Ellen Charles Edwards, is this a sort of... you know, is this the sort of change in our suburbs that we are, as I say, just going to have to suck up with the population coming in?
Look, we are going to grow. You'd hope that new development is built for families and people to live in rather for investors to make money off. We need to recognise that it's not just trendy young people living in apartments. There are a diversity of people. We need
trendy old people even.
Trendy old people, but we need to plan for kids. You know, we were talking about having an active, healthy city. Where are the kids going to play if they're in apartments? That's something I don't think we've been very good at doing.
Including a big park there amongst the apartments. We've had a text come in which kind of goes to that as well. Ray says, I've moved back to Brisbane after 10 years to be with my partner who works in the inner city as an environmental science student. I was challenged to move back here knowing what's coming for Brisbane over the coming decades with respect to environmental degradation and real climate change. Oh, Ray, you've got a lot to say. I'm absolutely baffled that people are continuing to move to Queensland in droves and was indeed shocked to see how much the city has changed in that short time. There is little here for the environment. Progression towards reducing demand on the environment and mitigation or planning or building for a pretty bleak future. Main roads being congested and the likes should be the least of our concern. I suppose we're also feeling, you know, the climate change, you know, the warning, there's fires, there's major storms, we know that. I think I saw a headline the other day that if you're 32 years old or below or younger, then you have never had a month that is below average temperature wise. That's kind of stark, isn't it? So it goes to the question I asked earlier about whether we're designing for hot weather and for what's coming in terms of bigger storms. Is there any more to say on that, Morgan, do you think? In terms of these big apartments going up?
I suppose the design specifics to withstand storms and stuff like that, I probably can't provide too much comment on. But look, I'm pretty optimistic with how we're growing now. And there has been a shift away from just continually expanding and going further and further out. And we're seeing this with the pretty clear infill targets that we have around Brisbane. So local residents would have seen their areas change quite a bit and they would have seen growth along those corridors, like I said previously. And, you know, they're all mechanisms to stop us from going further out and just continuing, you know, into these highly environmental areas that are on the outskirts of Brisbane.
Mm. Chris has also texted in from Kedron. Do you think there's enough open space being provided to support the density? I think a key challenge for Brisbane is going from a city where you could use your backyard to kick the football to having to need a park. That's what we've been hearing over the last couple of years as well. Is it going to mean the end of backyard cricket? Because, you know, we don't have those backyards. Is that more and more where people are moving, those sorts of houses, Ellen?
It is, and it's a trade-off. And, you know, if people are losing their backyards, we need to make sure there is public space for them to play and use.
And is there?
Look, I think it's pretty mixed. I think there certainly could be more. Brisbane doesn't do that great in the inner city for provision of public space compared with even Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah, right. What do you think about that then, Laurel?
I'd agree with Ellen. I think it's patchy. We do know that there are some master plan developers that do wonderful work around open space provision. In fact, they create sort of almost the spine of new communities around open space corridors. And I'm thinking about Greater Springfield, for example, with their fantastic Rebel Domain, keeping mature trees in place and ensuring that the open space becomes a lungs in that development corridor. But there is a certain meanness around very small lots with big houses on them and not even room for a little dog, let alone for a game of cricket. So this is a reality for us as we densify in those middle and outer areas. And as Morgan said, there's an imperative here that, you know, if we want to save the environment, we're going to have to look at a more dense future.
Mm. 22 to 11, 22 minutes left of Focus on ABC Radio Brisbane. Emma Griffiths with you today, and we're talking about your suburb, where you live and how you get around and where you walk the dog. And Marilyn has called in from Bulimba. The number is 1300 222 612. Marilyn, what did you want to say?
Oh, hello, Emma. I was just wanting to talk a little bit about my suburb. It's a sort of isolated little pocket close to the city, and it's got two main roads out of it. In the last 25 years, you know, it's become quite gentrified and quite trendy. I mean, we love it.
Yeah, I love going there.
Yeah, but what has happened is we've had a lot of apartments built, and obviously people want to live here. Those two main roads are still the only way out of the suburb. Now, we've also got an army camp which the federal government is going to sell for development, and there's still the two main roads out. And I just wonder what's going to happen. Are people going to have to leave for work at 5:30 in the morning to get into the city? Because, you know, again, with the gentrification, people are more affluent people are moving in. They tend to use their cars. You know, so we're in a sort of time bomb here.
What's the solution then, Marilyn, if you see it? I mean, is it creating another corridor, making another road? Is it having to live without a car and use better public transport if they can provide it?
I would hope, you know, for instance, the ferries are a lovely way to get into the city. But, you know, the city cabs coming from Bulimba stop everywhere into the city. So it's a 40-minute commute, you know. That kind of thing, when people think they live in an inner city suburb, you know, doesn't rest well with them. If you know what I mean.
Oh, I know what you mean. It should be like an express city cat or something.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing really is that the city council is now widening one of the roads to provide better feed into the city. But we've still got these two roads out of Bulimba. So, you know, all these cars, there's still going to be these bottlenecks. You know, I don't know the solution. I mean, it could be really expensive ones, like some sort of, you know, tunnels under the river and things like that, and some sort of orchestrated feed. I mean, I'm not a town planner. I'm just looking at the issues that we've got now.
Isn't it good, Marilyn? I've got, I don't know, a few people here that might have some ideas as well,
yeah,
particularly
I'd like to hear them.
A couple who work as town planners. So, well, first of all, Natalie Raymond, you do work as a town planner. So what's the solution for Bulimba?
Well, I think also it's about, you know, looking at the different ways to get in and out of that suburb, because as you mentioned, and as Marilyn mentioned, there is the ferry, there's the city cats. So, yes, let's get some more city cats services. If there's some, you know, express, that would be great. But there's also a ferry that can take you over to Newstead. You could jump on one of the new Lime scooters and scoot along the river, walk into
the city. They look unsafe to me.
They're fantastic.
I'm not sure my balance is up to it.
And
I'm only mid-40s. I mean, if you're 70, you're not going to get on one of those scooters, Natalie. Unless, I'm sorry, if you're 70 and you want to, feel free to email me and complain, griffiths.emma@abc.net.au.
But the point is that the more people you get on those scooters, the less people are in cars and therefore less congestion on the road. There's also opportunities to, you know, for the city to look at other focuses of employment, because, you know, not everyone needs to get into the city for work. You could be going out to the airport. You know, that's a third road.
Work in Bulimba.
So you'd
get a job at the bookshop. Ellen, have you got any solutions for Bulimba? Put a population cap on the place?
No, look, I think bridge. And I have to say, the Green Bridge, the Eleanor Chanel Bridge to UQ, has absolutely transformed transport and access to the UQ campus. It has led to a real spread of where students are living across the city.
In what way?
Well, they used to be, you know, pocketed up in Turinga and Toowong, and now we have students all stretched down to Mount Gravatt. And the commute time is just absolutely fabulous from the southern suburbs.
How do they get there from the southern suburbs?
They get on the busway and they're at the campus in 10, 15 minutes. It is just extraordinary. We have good transport. We can have more population and we can actually, you know, have less pressure on things like key arterial roads.
Mm. Okay. What about you then, Morgan? What's your answer for Marilyn and Bulimba? And it's not just Bulimba, I guess, but it's that whole sort of inner east, right? It's a big popular area.
Well, I think Marilyn touched on it, even if she didn't try to, is that building more roads is not going to solve the problems. You know, it's not going to lead to less congestion, maybe for a very short period of time, but, you know, very soon that congestion will just come back again. What it's about is providing options for people to get around. So that's providing services and stuff like that they need close to home. That might not necessarily be good when they have to travel the city for work, but it means providing more buses and stuff like that so they can get to work, or providing more reliable city cat stops. That's really where we need to go. We can't just be building more and more roads to try and alleviate these issues.
Mm-hmm. So you think of the bridge as well, Ellen. I'm just wondering, in terms of city council as well and the surrounding councils, are they good enough at looking at where people are moving into and what the population demands are?
We do our best. It's very tricky to forecast population out into the future. They do a pretty good job. But, you know, the pace of growth is pretty extraordinary in Brisbane, and it's a big challenge for the planners to just cope with the sheer numbers.
So we're going to have some discomfort as we all squeeze in. You like the bridge idea too, Laurel?
I really like the bridge idea. I mean, we have this curly, funny, snaky river in Brisbane, which creates all these peninsulas, not just Bulimba, but there are several of them. One of the issues for getting bridges into those areas is community concern about what that means. So, as Ellen was saying, the Eleanor Chanel Bridge to the UQ only is for buses and pedestrians and cyclists. So it's not a vehicular bridge in the sense that it doesn't take private cars.
And that's preferable?
It's preferable if we could do that at Bulimba and other points around the city. I think that communities would buy into that and perhaps be more supportive than if they thought it was going to be a car for private car bridge.
Mm. Bev has texted in as well, saying a classic point is what has happened in Cooperoo. It's really interesting that inner southern area of Brisbane is having a big say today. We're very, Bev says, we have very few parks, but heaps of units. Finally, the council created a park. Yay, but only one covered table. Are there any barbecues there, Bev? There are a few seats, but absolutely no coverage. I fought for an additional bin, as there was only one placed in the large park, but got nowhere. If they're trying to get people outdoors, make the areas livable, please. Thanks. Love your shoe. Oh, you mean show. I've got good shoes too, Bev. Thanks so much for texting in. Carol from Brookfield. Hello, Carol. Hi. Is your suburb changing the way you want to?
Oh, not really. We're close to near Indooroopilly, and I think the main problem there is not also Indooroopilly Bridge insufficient to cater for the area, but there's public transport in Indooroopilly, Toowong, Auchenflower, there's a train station and Guyatt Park for the city cat, but you can't park at those places. They just get so full, so you can't get to the public transport to get on it. And other things is the apartments being built with insufficient parking spaces so that everyone who, you know, wants a second parking spot in those apartments park all over the streets. So they're being hogged by unit places that build apartments with insufficient parking.
So you've got no park and go options there. It's really just drive and, I don't know, drive. Okay, Carol, if you think of active transport, how would you go cycling from Brookfield to the nearest train or bus station?
I can't cycle anyway, but as you said, you know, what has the older population to do when you've got balance problems? And if we're an ageing population, how does that cater for the cycling? I think there is a lot of cycling.
So a scooter? I don't think I'd be getting on one of those scooters. Oh, they look fun, maybe at the Botanic Gardens or something, but not along a street.
No. Anyway,
Carol,
there's not enough parking at the train stations or Guyatt Park, and the apartments being built with insufficient parking. Why don't they have to require them to build sufficient parking spaces for the high-rises or for their tenants?
Okay.
And the other point was when they do, City Council do hold forums to meet the town planners, they just don't seem to be for importing. They just seem to importing information. You go there and you're virtually told what's happening and they're not really interested in what your thoughts are. So the forums don't seem to provide information, provide you a chance to have your say.
So you went to one of those recently, did you?
I have been to two, not recently, but I just felt like, oh, that was a waste of time. It's a fait accompli as to what's happening.
And what was that? What were they about, Carol?
Indooroopilly area. I can't remember what the exact
okay
was, but
interesting. Yeah, Laurel Johnson from UQ, on the money, aren't you, with people feeling like their voices are just not heard. It's like they feel like anything they say is not really having an impact.
There is that sense of frustration around that. But also as a city, what's our level of maturity to have these conversations in public forums, We had a politics in the pub program at one stage where people would, all sorts of issues would emerge in those areas. So if you're just looking at formal government as your pathway to influence change and create better design and better development in your area, you know, that's a really limited formal pathway. But there are other conversations.
For example, you get to vote once every 4 years.
That's right. And the show we're having right now, we can have mature conversation about the growth and change in our city and how people are impacted by that, and the then what, you know, or how might we do things a bit differently.
Mm. And Morgan, I'm interested there then in what Carol was saying around regulations that planners have enough car parks for the residents that are going into high rise.
Yeah.
Is that well enough done?
Yeah, so I suppose parking rates have definitely dropped over the last few years, and it's a difficult balance.
What do you mean by parking rates, like the number of car parks?
Required, yeah. Generally, they have dropped, and it's a difficult balance between getting people to use the infrastructure we have, so the public transport infrastructure, and if you have well-serviced areas with, you know, public transport, then local governments want to get that money back somehow, and they do that by lowering the parking rates and things like that. So it is a bit of a balance between, you know, how much parking do you provide and how much do you encourage people to use as other methods. Looking into the future, it is going to be interesting to see what happens with, you know, parking rates, especially over the next 20 years' time when people aren't owning as many cars now as they used to. Not everyone has licenses these days. People are talking that they might not even own cars in the next 20 years because people will be using a leasing scheme where they just hire a subscription and they get around.
They still need somewhere to park it, though.
Well, not necessarily, no. So,
what are you going to do with it?
So you can have autonomous vehicles that are continuously moving around the city without stopping. So you order it like you would a cab. It comes and picks you up, and then you can drive to a particular location.
It runs on electricity then, or something a bit more sustainable than fuel.
Yeah, so I suppose we're you're talking, you know, quite far into the future here now. But those are the type of things that people are having serious conversations about, yes.
Living without a car. Laurel, is that something that comes across your desk in terms of Brisbane in the future? Like, is it 20 years, 30 years, 40 years where there'll be markedly fewer cars on the road, even with more people?
It's potentially 10 years. Morgan's quite right. The autonomous vehicle movement, we're seeing it across the world, and it's transforming cities. It's potentially transformative, and any development that we're doing today is in place beyond any of our lives. So we need to consider things like what is the future of the car? Does it have a use by date?
What do you do with all these car parks that are not needed?
Oh, lots of great ideas for those parks. Turn them into green spaces and play spaces for children and productive spaces in the suburbs. So lots of potential there.
Yeah. Mm. That sounds extraordinary to me that it may be within 10 years. I mean, the last sort of headlines I saw about driverless vehicles were that they were crashing or that they ran over somebody. You know, there's obviously still lots of testing to be done.
Certainly lots of testing to be done. I actually had a go at one at Greater Springfield. They're not allowed on public roads in Australia, but they can be trialled on private roads. So I had a go at one at Greater Springfield. I'm sure other people did as well. It's very slow. I think it was faster to walk, but it was a very comfortable experience. And there was a map on the inside it, so you could see exactly where you were going. And they're here.
Oh, not an alien, but yes, a driverless car. Doug's called in from Tagum. Doug, I always mispronounce that.
Everyone does.
How do you call it?
Yeah.
What do you say? How do you say it?
Tagum.
Tagum. All right.
Well, when you actually put it into a computer the first time, if it doesn't like it, if you're trying to change your address or something, it tells you it's not an acceptable suburb or something.
Yeah, right. Well, that's something that a driverless vehicle would have to get across, wouldn't it?
Listening to all this debate about what's going to happen in the next 10 years, I'm an older person, so I'm interested in what's happening right now. And town planners have historic records of what happened in years gone by, and the decisions they made affect us right now. So how are the decisions in the future going to be any better than the ones they made previously?
Oh, right. So it's...
You know, like In the suburb I live, there's one suburb next door where Fort Fitzgibbon, where there's a nicely constructed houses on small blocks of land. At night time, if you're driving through there, like around the back to go to some place for dinner or just to visit somebody, the traffic is heavy because there's vehicles parked on the footpath and on the side of the road. You can't even drive through as you would normally. You've got to make sure there's no car coming towards you because it's just a badly put together thing. And parking is the problem because most of those people who live there are going against what your town planner said, have got two cars because there's husband and wife and there's a couple of kids probably, and they both work and they've got kids to take to school and so forth. So, I mean, that's a town planning fiasco, I reckon.
Okay, and that's in Fitzgibbon?
That's Fitzgibbon.
Right.
And in this particular suburb, next door to us is Brackenridge, and they're trying to realign the road system there at Depot Road and put an overpass over the Ryeville line a bit further down towards, Linkfield Road links onto the system of travelling over the top of the road where the railway line is.
Yeah, lots of changes there, Doug. So, I mean, if you're looking at an area like Fitzgibbon, and there are plenty of suburbs like this in the southwest as well, Laurel, where people have to drive. There are two adults in the house and they both have to work. Public transport's time-consuming and it's not easy to get to work on time. So it's a massive brain shift to even think about, what, half the number of cars being on the road.
It is, and our car dependence as a city has been right from the get-go, from settlement time, and we pull up our tram system at probably a really critical time in the city's history.
But, so that was a mistake?
Definitely a mistake if you compare us to Melbourne, for example. So retrofitting that kind of quality of on-demand, affordable and comfortable public transport is a real challenge for this city. And until we can crack that, we are going to have too many cars. And in the interim, we wait for transitions like and new technologies like autonomous vehicles, something to crack what we call that last mile, the mile from house to the public transport, is highly problematic. So the idea of the e-scootering over a bridge would be just wonderful, and then dropping into a portal of public transport options would be fantastic. Those are all possibilities. They're happening in other cities in the world. It's not just dreamtopia, but we need some serious policy leadership around transport.
Mm, that e-scooter, maybe if I did a bit more yoga, my balance would improve a bit better too. Ellen, when you look at population projections, is there a point at which it's expected to even out in Brisbane? Is there, like, a certain year where, you know, what can you tell me? What's your prediction of the future, please, great population seer?
I don't think a slowing of growth or a stopping of growth is in Brisbane's horizon, actually. Looking at the projections, we are on a growth trajectory. For that to change, there needs to be some change at the national level to do with our migration program.
Really? So, yeah. And that's what the Prime Minister has announced that he's looking at as well.
He is trying to make some adjustments, but Australia and SEQ look at our best estimates have them growing into the future with no stabilisation in sight.
So that sort of indicates this is an urgent problem. Just as we finish up here with a couple of minutes left on Focus, Natalie Raymond, what's one thing? That our authorities should be doing to help us better cope with this as a city?
Well, I guess for me the one thing would be to not ban townhouses in low-density residential areas of Brisbane. I mean, that was one of the things that came out of the recent Brisbane blueprint. And for me, that's, you know, just another housing choice that we should have in our low-density areas. Don't move townhouses into the areas that we should have medium density or high density, because they're the locations that we really do need to fit, you know, a bigger population so we can
go
increase.
Up.
Yeah.
Okay. So not happy with that. That planning suggestion that came out from the council this week. Laurel Johnson, what's something that authorities should be doing right now?
Breaking the car dependence. Whatever it takes, technology, a mix of options, we need to break the car dependence in Brisbane, because some of the reaction response to, for example, banning townhouses in low-density areas is around the traffic and transport and parking issues that many of your callers have identified.
That's a huge change in the suburbs that it's sounding like you are not happy with. Morgan, Planning Institute, what would you say?
I think there's probably two key points, and that is understanding that we can do density better through design, and that's on a site-by-site basis, and also understanding that provision of infrastructure is more than just providing roads. People need more than just roads to enjoy cities. So, you know, once we understand that we need to provide a full suite of things, including open space, you know, shops and things like that, people can actually use, that's what's required.
Okay. Sounds like a lot more thinking is required. Thank you very much for your time, Morgan Randall, Laurel Johnson, Dr. Ellen Charles Edwards and Natalie Raymond. Really appreciate you sharing your wisdom today. This has been Focus on ABC Radio Brisbane. I'm Emma Griffiths. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 10 for another big discussion. ABC News time now, and you'll get an update on the fire situation around Queensland.
Be prepared and know who to call for help. For assistance during a flood or storm emergency, call the SES on 132 500 or use the Queensland SES app for life-threatening emergencies.